Having a big family is something that I did not expect, but I'm sort of already here, and I had questions for somebody who knew it better than I did. So today on the podcast, we have on Ariana Galloway to talk all about having a big family and the various dynamics around structuring their life to make it all work. Ariana is known as Oh That Hippie Mom with Lots of Kids on Instagram, and she's been a favorite motherhood account for me for many years. She just had her 9th child, and so she offers us wisdom from her lived experience on many topics today, like listening for and feeling your babies before they come in, also known as spirit babies, how she and her husband decided to add more each time, their vasectomy reversal story, postpartum mental health factors, how to deal with the judgment of family, friends, and strangers about having many children, the logistics of bedrooms, cars, chores, etc., and some advice around sibling dynamics. So let's dive in.
Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes.
True hydration comes from a mix of water and minerals, not water alone. And while we love to discuss the benefits of Redmond Relight powders for you parents in the fertility, pregnancy, and postpartum times of your life, let's not forget about the kids. Redmond has launched their Relight Kids line of electrolyte powders, specifically with kids in mind. The mineral amounts and proportions are lessened to be more appropriate for children or for adults who want or need less sodium intake. They come in three fantastic flavors that my children love: pineapple, pink lemonade, and grape, and contain all the benefits of Redmond's honorable manufacturing and quality control practices. They contain the 60 plus trace minerals in just the salt portion alone, and we know how much metabolic support childhood demands, so support your kiddo in their sports and play recovery, growth, energy production, and more with Relight for Kids. You can use code HEALTHYMOTHER for 15% off at redmond.life. And use the code to also enjoy the other Redmond products like their natural toothpastes, seasoning salts, bentonite clays for baths, and more. Again, head to redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15%. Okay, so today on the podcast, this is sort of an episode that is really for my selfish intent on figuring out the way that you live your life and how you do it all with such a big family. So we have Ariana Galloway on the podcast today, and your Instagram handle is Oh That Mom With That Hippie Mom With Lots of Kids, right? Yes. And I started following you, I think, like when you only maybe had 7 kids or 6, and now you have 9. So yeah, it's been a couple of years, and I just think that your life is so fascinating, inspiring. I learned so much from you. I've highly enjoyed following you, and I mean, we were just talking before we started to record that it feels like we know each other. We're like mom friends, and it is kind of a silly thing to say about the internet, but it's also so beautiful. And I think that women, just in whatever way that we can connect or learn from each other, fine. If it's in person, obviously that would be ideal. But if it's also across many states and online, it just is what it is. And you are somebody that I've wanted to pick your brain for such a long time because of the way that you have built your family and the way that you do things. And it's somebody, you know, we've gotten a lot of podcast requests about sibling dynamics too. So I'd love to talk about the ideas of having a big family, but then also sibling rivalries and sibling dynamics, because you have 9 kids, and that is so amazing and also really overwhelming for me to think about. And I'm just like, how do you do it? Like, I kiss the ground that you walk on. So thank you for being here, Ariana.
Yeah, thanks for having me. That Hippie Mom, I have to share the story around that real quick. But when I was pregnant with our 6, I would always meet up with a group of moms at the same coffee shop. And when I had Lennox, I walked in for the first time after him, and the barista yelled across the coffee shop, "Hey, you're that mom. You're that hippie mom with all the kids." And so it went from there. But yeah, we have 9, all the way from 23 to this little guy who's 4 months. So we have 23, 19, 16, 13, 12, 10, 6, 4, and him.
Oh, I literally, my eyes are watering thinking about it. Okay, you're going to have to tell. So yeah, continue. Just tell us about yourself And then let's talk about like how your family has begun and started, and you know, how old are you, and how did you make these choices and decisions, and how do, you know, all of that. I want to know every single thing.
Okay. So it was never, I didn't grow up imagining or dreaming that I would be a mama to a huge family. In fact, I thought, I knew from a very early age that I wanted to be a mother, but I thought like one, maybe two. Never, like, I was the one that like after, like probably in my mid 30s, I want to travel. I want to do this. I want to do that. And then my husband and I got pregnant at 16 and 19, so very early and young, and still didn't have any ideas that we would keep going. In fact, after our second, it was like, yeah, we're done. And then we had a third, and it was like, yeah, we're done. And everyone, it was like, yeah, we're done. And then we realized that we were really just like attempting to kind of pacify any judgment or just uneasiness or that assumptions that came in if we wanted to keep going. Cause it wasn't like, it was, I get more or less of a reaction now on having nine than I did when we had four so many years ago. So it's been interesting to see how it's becoming more common and normalized actually. But yeah, we just, and I, when people ask like our why, I've spent so many years trying to like wrap words to like create a cohesive answer for people on this, but it's, I describe it as like if I were to write a really intimate love letter and then someone said, okay, now go read it to thousands and thousands of people, it's just, it wouldn't hit the same way. It wouldn't hit the same way, and it just, it wouldn't make sense. People would still be like, I don't get it. So it's just, it's just this like deep seated knowing, and it's not some, and we've been very intentional with each babe. Yeah. So it's hard to like pinpoint our reasons why, but it has just been like each one there's kind of, we'll see. But for a little bit there, we were like, this is it. Yeah. You know, we kind of fooled ourselves. Even so, Esme, Atreyu and Lincoln are vasectomy reversal babies.
Oh wait. Okay, so after you had six, then you got a vasectomy?
Yeah.
So, and wait, okay, I need to know everything about that. That okay. So yeah, tell us.
My husband was transitioning out from the military, and with that there was a lot of uncertainty. We didn't know where we were going to land because we knew we weren't going to go back to Colorado. We didn't know where we would land financially, like health insurance, all the things that you're thinking about when this huge life transition. And we had, you know, people saying, well, you have six. And so you're like, yeah, we have six. And so we did what we thought was the best thing. And he got a vasectomy. And we both knew right away it wasn't a best choice for us. It wasn't right. In fact, he called me from the room and said, are you sure? And I started crying so heavily, I couldn't like answer. I know, it still makes me emotional. And then the doctor came in, and that was that. He went through with it. And 3 months.
Oh my gosh, later, wait a minute. This is going to make me cry. Like, I know. Okay, because you were like, I do want to keep going with our family, but it also is kind of feels like maybe impossible. Was that the main feeling, or was it like the permanence, or, you know, tell me.
It was second guessing ourselves. And we really had like got weak in the knees and kind of let outside judgment in. And I'm so grateful that we were able to kind of turn it around and, you know, allow Esme to join us. And the two boys. But yeah, it was just because six kids is a lot, but there's also nothing wrong that we want to expand our family. I mean, if we feel we can do it in the sense of, you know, showing up for them in all the ways, then, you know, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I have to know if you feel a connection with, like, do you get that sense of a spirit baby and you're like, oh, there's more, like we need to bring it. That happened? Yeah.
Esme,
okay.
A huge, huge catalyst for how I've spoke to spirit baby. And that's actually a big part of my social media that kind of took off with speaking to spirit baby. And I remember learning the language around it, like spirit baby, when I after Ava, our third. So she's 16 now. And I remember after her, and again, we were like, yeah, she's our last, even though I kind of knew. I knew I still wanted more, but it just kind of would be present in the way. And I hear a lot of mamas speak to this, where it's like, I would sit down at the dinner table and then like kind of look around. And it was like this very present feeling of something's missing. And I couldn't pinpoint it then, but it, and then that kept on just getting more and more present for me. But Esme, her spirit baby communication was just out of this world. And then everything that like unfolded afterwards was really, really powerful for me. I had these dreams consistently for near 3 years of a little girl around 5 or 6. And she would be in the distance and she'd be reaching out and she'd be crying and she'd be saying, oh, why didn't you wait for me?
Oh my gosh.
I'm
going to cry.
I know it was very emotional. And so I'm grateful that my husband is as open as he is to the large family as well. But yeah, so leaning into that, and I did everything that I knew how to meet that space of just, you know, writing her letters and, explaining and like really trying to like close that, because there is no, like, there's no pain or hurt feelings with spirit baby. Like, I get that question a lot from mamas, like, I feel another one tapping, but I'm just done. So there's like the opposite of what I was experienced, where they don't want to invite another child in, so there's no pain. There's no hurting the spirit baby. We looked around at our options and where we were in Texas, there wasn't anything really with that felt, achievable that wouldn't kind of knock us off kilter financially, and that I felt willing, and that felt, it just didn't feel good to like put that such a ding on our family. And then we moved to the Austin area and found a physician that does it through a ministry for, it was like $1,300.
Oh, the reversal. Yeah. Okay. Because just to clarify for people, you were feeling all this knocking on the door of the spirit baby of Esme after the vasectomy had happened.
Yes. Yeah.
And you were trying to find that closure. Okay. And then you just saw it was just like not happening. And so then you were like, okay, we maybe need to do a reversal for
this. Yeah. And it's interesting too, because the Esme was such like my little medicine woman, because there was so much healing, like childhood healing within her pregnancy and my postpartum and just mothering her, that years later, I had this realization that it wasn't the little girl that was Esme, but it was me. So she came in like, yeah. Like I drew pictures of her. There was so much energy pouring into like just like letting it go and kind of brushing her aside, which I had spent most of my adult life doing to my little girl self and not tending to those wounds. So it was really
well,
sweet.
And you were so young when you first had your first baby that you didn't really get to probably fully feel like you had your whole childhood, you know?
No, and I had a pretty sticky childhood prior to that. So there was a lot of adulting and parenting myself very early on before that. So it was,
oh my gosh.
Pwn experience.
Okay, I did not know about that vasectomy piece of this whole thing. And mm-hmm. I was going to ask you, you know, in between children or like when you thought that you had been done, how were you guys managing that? Because that's something, again, this is like totally all of my own selfish questions, but I'm sure that the audience will relate to, because it's just something that is constantly on our minds, because we've been really, 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 really blessed with easy fertility. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, when you're like, I don't necessarily want to be pregnant either right now or maybe ever again, it's sticky when you're not wanting to maybe go on like birth control, but then you know, we've thought about vasectomy and then we're like, I don't know yet, maybe not yet, but probably at some point in the future, I don't know. Like, so I just really appreciate you sharing that story, because I think that it can be something where the pull of these children, because I'm not really like that connected. And I always say this, I feel like I'm just there. I have so many friends who are extremely connected to the other side. Mm-hmm. And so maybe in comparison to them, I feel like I'm not that connected. But when it has come to my children I have always been. Not my first, really, but I was so young too. I mean, I was 26, so 10 years older than you were at that time. Wow, that's crazy to think. And, you know, that's probably also another thing about when you can have a large family when you start early. Because we're kind of running into this situation where it's like time is sort of running out, not necessarily for me, but more for him. But anyways, but with my second, third, and fourth, it was like some of the most like magical experiences of my entire life where I'm just like, I'm not making this up. And if anything, I'm trying to out-rationalize and explain these like weird experiences that I'm having. But I know that it's that baby.
Yeah. And I think too, with spirit baby becoming such a more common phrase of people using and sharing their experiences, a lot of times we start to kind of play the comparison game and we're looking for something that feels this like really big and powerful moment or experience. But more oftentimes than not, like spirit baby is so subtle and gentle, and it's those little synchronicities that we start to pay attention to, and it does show up in like our dream state, and or even our child, another child being like, "You're pregnant," or "I'm gonna have a sister," out of nowhere. Like that spirit baby communications.
Okay, this is so funny because right now, you know, this is a really bad conversation for me to be having with you while I'm ovulating, but so we always wanted to have three. The third baby was really, really hard for us. There was also the closest gap that we'd had at that point, and it was just super tough. And I remember very specifically during her first year of life saying to myself, I can never do this again. I can never put my family through this again. Like, this is done. But the second that she was born, there was a weird energetic openness and like a just deep intuitive knowing that there was one more. And I was like, absolutely under no circumstance are we having four kids. Like, no way. But it never went away. And it was just only stronger and stronger in time. And then, you know, she kind of snuck in there. Like, it wasn't intentional. And our other ones had been intentional. It's the most beautiful gift in the world. You know, I'm so happy that she's here. She's such a joy. And she so, so, so very much belongs to be here, or, you know, is meant to be here. But wait, where was I going with that? This is one of those like mom brain fart moments. I was going to ask about, I don't know. I lost it. Something about maybe feeling them or hearing them. I guess for me, it was this feeling that I didn't even want at the time, but it was so clear that it was happening. And it was just like, no. It was as if somebody had told me the forecast, like, it's going to snow next week on Wednesday. Like, and so then like, now the days of the week are going through and I'm like, it's going to snow next week on Wednesday. Like, I know it is. And I don't really want it to for whatever reason, but I just knew this baby was coming. And we struggled with that though, and how to make that choice. But it was also so kind of like cool to be a part of something bigger than me in that way and whatever. But then now, that's what I'm talking about, is like now that we have the four, five always felt like just for some reason that feels, hi buddy. Five feels like a really, really big number. I mean, I know talking to you, it doesn't feel like a big number, but I'm thinking about it now. And yeah, there is this, whenever I do talk about it with like some friends or some family is supportive and some is very much like, I wouldn't say it necessarily judgy, like in a really harsh way, but you can feel that undertone. You can feel that they're like, but no, but why? And sometimes I think it is a little bit protective of me because I have hard postpartums. So I wanted to ask you two questions. One, what have been some of the judgments that you guys have received about having a larger family? How did you deal with it? And then also how has your, you know, pregnancies, births, postpartum been? Like, do you have a pretty easy time with all of them? Is it different each baby? Do you struggle? And then like when you're thinking about adding another child, is there like one of those phases that you're dreading or not really? I want to know all of that stuff.
Okay. So we've had a pretty easy fertility journey as well. So getting pregnant has been easy for us. Pregnancy is something also that is easy. Postpartum has been different for each. The majority of them also has been fairly easy. And I think that's why too, like it feels good and easy to me. So it's easy. Yeah. you, right? When you want more children. But with my first, I did have some postpartum anxiety. And I have spoken to this too a little bit, but it was more so, it felt, I had this fear being so young that people were, had like the microscope over me or the magnifying glass over me. And so they were just waiting for me to mess up, which is obviously now older and a mama to more, like it's going to happen. Even, you know, mothering nine, you're going to make, you do things that you didn't, don't feel great or you wish you hadn't, and you have to mend and repair. But I tried to meet this outside illusion of perfection. And so it really fed into my anxiety. And I even like, I swore that like people were trying to take my baby away from me if I just messed up. And so I was really nervous about her getting sick and started, I had OCD tendencies with the anxiety. And so that was really difficult. And that resolved and kind of healed through my second baby. And then her postpartum, which I was still working full time with those two babes. But my third, fourth, fifth, and sixth were good postpartums, which is interesting because our fifth is a NICU baby and it was really stressful. But the support I had specifically for her and the women around me made a world of difference. And I had gotten so used to kind of doing it on my own since I haven't had much of a, like, we don't have family and we moved around a lot with the military. So it's interesting that what may be like the most difficult postpartum actually felt really supportive and solid in how I felt to meet that difficulty and that the hardness around that. And then Esme.
That's beautiful. I love that. Like you would never think that anyone would say that.
Right. Yeah.
After having four non-NICU babies and then now you have a fifth NICU. What, do you mind sharing the story or if you don't want to, that's fine.
No, it's fine. So she was, she was our last hospital birth baby and what had happened in, so throughout the pregnancy, I was meeting with the doctor, building relationship with him. We had just moved to El Paso from Colorado. And he got into a horrible bike accident and died. And I had just been, I had just been diagnosed with, in uterine growth restriction with Cambry. And so I was considered high risk. And then, so all his high risk patients transferred to the next door OBGYN where they like partnered and covered for each other. And she was, I don't have anything negative to say about her, but she got bombarded with all these high-risk patients trying to, you know, and it just was like the typical story of she just kind of needed to, like, is what it felt like. And I was seeing a perinatologist and her throughout the rest of my pregnancy, and it was just extremely pathologized. And even when, yeah, that's right, bud. Even when her growth had caught up and she was within normal range, they were saying that she had to be taken at 37 weeks. And I just didn't understand. And I started to really press up against that. I ended up going into labor at 37 weeks, which all of my babes, yeah, is like, I did not want to be induced. I was like pushing up. It just didn't make sense to me, but she ended up coming, which was, I was just, wow. But she ended up with meconium aspiration and was in the NICU for a little bit with that.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, it's stressful.
Yeah. But it could have been a lot worse. I mean, obviously it was horrible. It was sad. It was hard. It was scary. But I had an amazing group of women around me who really held me through that. So.
Oh my gosh. I love that story. I think, do you think that your body went into labor because you were like, you knew?
Oh, for sure. There was so much. Yeah. There was, you know, prayer and talking to my baby and I just
being like, you need to come, like you got to come out, sister.
Yeah. And it was, okay, very,
Sorry. What did you say?
I said we could go into all the reasons of why, but you know, I didn't want the, yeah.
Right. No, I love that though. I think that there's such a connection that we can have when there is something going like on like that with the external pressures. Mm-hmm. So I wanted, do you find out the sex of your babies or no?
I used to, yeah. And then he was a surprise. We kept him a surprise. It's always been, we did the, for our last babies where we were at home, we did the blood test for gender. But with our last, the first thing I said was actually, we're not finding out, because my husband's always like, I have to know, I got to know. And he really likes to know the gender. But this one, I was like, the first thing I said to him was like, I'm not budging.
Yeah, good. So, cool. Yeah. Was it fun? Did you feel, what did you think of it?
I loved it. And I was, it's the first time I was wrong.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Really?
Yeah. Every single baby I've had just a very clear knowing, like you were explaining the hit with the spirit baby, like it was a forecast. It was like, there was no inching away from that. There was no second guessing. It was, I knew, like, and
oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow. 8 times you've been correct. That's kind of crazy.
And so yeah, he came out.
Wow. So he was, real surprise for you.
I was like, it's a boy.
That must have been so much fun too, just to like really feel like you were confident, and then it's so surprising.
Yeah. So with the
Go ahead.
The postpartum. So Esme's 7, I had her at home, but there was some birth trauma healing that I had to move through after her. So her postpartum was good, but there was a lot of like inner work and healing around my birth story. And then Atreyu, I had pretty severe postpartum depression and anxiety with him. And so, yes, that was a huge fear of working through when I got pregnant. And we had just barely started to talk about the possibility of inviting a 9th in, and bam, I was pregnant. Like, it was like, whoa, like, wait. It was the first time I felt like this fear of like, wait.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, okay, how did you work through, what were the methods and ways that you were able to help clear some of those fears?
Story medicine. I just, with women who could really fully hold witness to my expression, and were open to doing that. So just share it on what was coming up for me, when it did. And, I'm really lucky in the sense that my oldest is a birth worker and a midwifery student. Whoa. She was here. She spent the summer with us. So she didn't want to miss the sibling's birth. And, so she was open to just like allowing me to pour over like what was coming up for me. And she wasn't present for the, his postpartum, Atreyu's postpartum. She was in Germany. But she knows, being my daughter, like just how deep thing, you know, how dark things had gotten there for a little bit for me. So just really sharing on it is what kind of helped me through the most. And we were going through so much at the time, with so many, we were moving a lot, and there was just a lot of shifting and transitions on top of kind of navigating all of that. So,
yeah. Oh my gosh. I mean, that is the thing for me, that postpartum is always really tricky. And so it feels like staring down, it feels to me like there's this thing that you love that you really, really want, and you can have more of it. But first you have to face this monster, right? You know, for like months. And I guess it's not always a guarantee, but it just feel, it's always the trickiest for me. I also love being pregnant. I love birth. And man, I should have you on to share all your birth stories. That would be like a 3-hour-long podcast, but I would love to hear it.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Yeah, I bet you, I mean, and how amazing and cool for you that your oldest is a birth worker and in midwifery school. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, I love that. But okay, thank you for sharing that. I wanted to just make sure that we covered the question too. What were some of the judgments about from other people? And then how did you deal with that? Because that can be really tricky. Like sometimes I can get really defensive and I don't even hear things that much, but I'm sort of like, okay, I hear you wanting to look out for me, but also this is like the best thing in the entire world. And if we can make it work, why wouldn't we, you know? But there isn't people in my direct sphere who have larger families like this. And so, although I do live in Idaho, so there is a lot of larger families because of, you know, like different religious groups and things like that. So there is more of that, I would say, maybe than in like an average place. But It does. People, especially when you're out in public, I can't imagine what it's like with you. But when I was pregnant with my fourth, people would just look at me like, oh, you got your hands full. Like,
yeah, the comments. Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us how it's been for you.
Pretty similar. I get the looks and the comments of like, you know how babies are made, right? And do you have a television? Yeah. And all of those. Yeah. but some of the bigger ones that have ruffled my feathers earlier on that I felt that kind of defense go up a little bit is that they're lacking in a big way of materialistic things like clothing, or they don't get to have the same experiences as kids with, you know, that come from a family of like three siblings. Another big assumption is that we are religious. Another one is that the older children do all the parenting of the younger ones, which that's probably the biggest one that I get a little like zippy with, because there's for one, it's not the dynamic of our family at all. But then also we have fallen so far away from that. Why is that such a horrible thing that older children know how to take care of and tend younger children? I mean, that's what happened. That was the normal for generations and generations. And of course, I'm not asking or expecting the older children to like change diapers and do like but there is love. I mean, they show up if someone needs something, the older ones tend to the little ones if I'm, you know, so it's just, there's this weird assumption that they're these little like live-in nannies or live-in babysitters. And that's something I remember when I was 16, people would say, oh, well, you got yourself a, you know, built-in babysitter for when you have more kids. And I just remember thinking like, that's not what it's all about. It's so strange to me that that's the first assumption or first comment that you would make towards a woman who is doing what she loves and mothering well, happy children.
And it's like, why always the negative? I feel like there's always this to be met with the sight of a large family and just immediately think about all the negatives. Like, I mean, don't you think that there's like a lot more to this story than meets the eye? And yeah, I saw something on Instagram. It was a reel where this woman was walking down the street and she was like, maybe she had two or three and she was pregnant again, something like that. And that this older man stopped her and just looked at her and said, oh, wow, you are going to have so much fun. And that it just like brought her to her knees. And I mean, it brought me to my knees. I just started immediately bawling when I watched it because I was like, that is such a beautiful change to, you know, view it like that. Like it is so much fun. And obviously, yeah, there's challenge, but the fun and the joy and the existential bliss of kids always supersedes any of the negative stuff. Like sometimes in the moment, it may not feel like that. You know, in the moment it can feel like this is crazy, this is hectic, this is whatever. But I don't know. I don't know. If I didn't have hard postpartums, I think I would also have like 8 or 9. It's just amazing. You know, it's such a, but I am still in this on the fence of thinking about this fifth baby, but I don't feel a spirit baby. So I wanted to ask you about that too. I don't really feel a connection to a particular soul in that way. Okay. And in some ways that kind of worries me because I'm sort of like, okay, so am I just making this up? Am I thinking about this? Because my kids, and especially my oldest son, is the one that is like begging on it, like begging. And I mean, he will get emotional about it. And he's just like, why? Like you, why not? Like, come on, just one more. Like you love kids, you love pregnancy. Like, because, you know, we're very open with him about just in the work that I am, I do. And also I'm sure the same in your house, you know, all my kids have seen a million birth videos and I talk about my menstrual cycle. I got an Oura ring recently. So he was overhearing a conversation about my husband and I talking about the Oura ring so that I can cycle track a little bit easier and just, you know, even with breastfeeding and the ups and downs, kind of like understand when I'm ovulating so that we can continue to prevent without anything permanent right now, because that's something we've thought about, but we just haven't actually made the jump because it still doesn't feel right. And so we're like, I don't know. But anyway, he was overhearing this conversation and he's just like, well, why do you not want to get pregnant again? And like, talking about it, well, you know, it's a lot, bud, and it is hard to meet all their needs and all these different things. But his just like obsession sort of about it. And then some of the other ones too are just like, we should have another baby, or they'll say things like, are you pregnant? Do you have a baby in your belly? And I'm like, no, why are you saying that?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was saying earlier.
Yeah, like, so it feels like it's around us, it's in the sphere, and then we do think about it, but then we're like, so how do you, because the things that come up for me are like, the attention and time to all of them is super challenging. And then do you homeschool, or you did, or
what? We homeschool.
You homeschool. Okay. See, so that to me also is extremely challenging. And so then I'm like, how am I going to do all this? And then affording it, like all the money. So I'd love to hear your sort of how you guys structure your life and like what, and I'm sure that it's different now because you do have like early 20s kids and teens and all that stuff. And mine aren't quite like that yet, but at some point you were like me and you were having, you know, your fifth and they were all little. And I don't know. I just would love to hear your perspective on how you manage that, because it can feel so, it's like, I literally wouldn't have time. My worry is that I wouldn't have time for all of them in those ways that matter well, where it's like, do I even know them? Like sometimes, particularly with my 6-year-old, I look at her and I'm just like, did we even like talk today?
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors.
One of the main things that I'm doing to support myself this postpartum is really focus on my postpartum nutrition, because although we know that we can't control sleep when we have a new little baby anymore, the one main pillar of health that we can control is what we put in our mouths and what we feed ourselves. So that includes nutritional supplements like the supplements from Needed, my very favorite prenatal on the market, and it is a postnatal as well. So that means it's a supplement that you take while you're postpartum and throughout your entire breastfeeding journey. So I recommend to my clients, patients, and friends to take the Needed prenatal multivitamin for at least the first 9 months postpartum or the entire time that you're breastfeeding to help support you nutritionally, give you all of the vitamins and minerals that you need, and keep you really feeling healthy and good during this entire intense time of your first year of motherhood. So go ahead and visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% off of your first order. So again, that's thisisneeded.com using code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. This is a big game-changing move for you, as well as focusing on your postpartum nutrition so that you can feel really good, supported, present in your motherhood, and then just enjoy your new baby.
Okay, now back to the show.
I think, well, I mean, do you want me to touch on the spirit baby question?
Yes, first? All of it. Okay. Let's hear it.
So this actually comes up a lot where it's, again, like we're looking for that big yes or that like punch in the gut, the heart is open, this is spirit baby. But also from my experience too, spirit baby is so intelligent in the way that it meets us in kind of what we need. And to evolve into, to evolve into the mama that they would need when they come earthside. And sometimes that looks like dropping out versus dropping in a big way. And so it can feel like distance and disconnect from spirit baby. And that actually was a big experience and something hugely different than I had experienced in my previous pregnancies. And even preconceptions, where I always had a very strong and intimate communication with spirit baby. But with Lincoln, okay, bud, it was like you're describing, there was just nothing there. It was very quiet. And even when he was womb side and I was pregnant with him, it still felt like there was just distance. There was, there was no dreams. There was no like, it was just, I mean,
obviously. So did that kind of freak you out at all? Or what did you think?
It did. I felt it created space for fear. But now being on the other side of it, I needed to sit with the fear. And there was so much healing and allowing that to be present. And it was the first time that I had felt fear for birth, for labor. And so it was,
because did you think like something was going to happen, or you mean?
No, it wasn't even any of that. It was interesting because what the fear was like around pain, which was like mind blowing for me because I had done it 8 times and had, you know, none of them had been like labor itself. It was just, I enjoy birth. Yes, it's painful and, you know, it rocks your world every single time. But I had, you know, an hour and 20 minute birth with Atreus. So I thought, well, maybe it's just because it was so crazy wild that, and it very intense, obviously. So maybe that's where the pain or the fear was coming up. But I just got to a point where I could feel myself pressing up against and resisting. And I just had to surrender, like we hear so many of us speak to, and really just allow all of that to be present. To where, and then when labor started, none of it was there. So interesting. So,
wow. Okay. So Then now, do you feel like you just immediately jumped into a deep connection with him, or did it take some time more?
It was immediate. It was pretty powerful, actually. Because I guess it was like you could label it as denial. Like late in my first trimester, I ordered a pair of regular shorts, like like for summer. And my daughters were like,
"Mom,"
like I was like, "Oh, they'll probably," you know. So there was these little things where I was sitting in a little bit of denial about this isn't real, this isn't happening. And even late in the pregnancy, it was just, I would tell my daughter, like, this is so wild. Like, this doesn't feel real. And the first thing one of the first things I said to when I was holding him and hugging him and, you know, looking all over him after he had been born and exploring him was, "You're real." Because it was like, no, he was there the whole time.
Okay, that's how I felt with my first, but it's so funny to hear you say that with your ninth.
The ninth, right? And that's what kept blowing my mind about it. It's like, what is happening? Because this is my ninth baby, but I'm very much moving through it as if it was my first. It really did feel like that in a lot of ways. The mysterious, like the mystery of it all and the confusion and the scary parts, it all felt very first time. So interesting.
Wow.
Wild.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That is awesome. Okay. I wanted to ask you too, how many weeks were all of your babies when they were born?
Most of them were right at 40, like right at my guest date. So yeah.
Except for 37, but yeah, other than that, they're
37,
all.
Okay. And then Atreyu, our eighth, was almost 42. So I've had two wild cards, and then the rest were like within a day or two or
40 weeks. Wow. Okay. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is so cool. And then do you, you know, you hear that when you're like a grand multipara.
Yeah.
Yes. So when you had
grand now.
Yeah. Or you're probably a great grand. So for those who don't know what I'm saying, when you're a first time pregnant mom, you're called a primip, which is like it's your primary baby, your first baby. And then when you've had like further subsequent pregnancies, then you're called a multip. But then when you've had five or more, you're called a grand multip. You're probably, you're in the great grand multip.
I think I am now.
But so I've heard from people, and I wanted to know your experience about this, that the uterus can kind of, you'd think maybe it would be that like, oh, the more kids you have, like they just slide right out. It's like so easy, so fast, whatever. Like maybe it just gets easier and easier. But then I've heard the opposite too sometimes, that the uterus can kind of be a little bit like fatigued, or that there's more likely chance of hemorrhage, or that like the afterbirth contractions are crazy, or that, you know, I don't know. I wanted to know your experience with that. Do you feel like as the births go on, you're noticing a big change, or not really? Or
not
really,
not at all. My first six were very similar. They were all between like 4 to 7 hours. So I also have pretty
quick. Oh my gosh.
But then 7 came along, and I labored with her for 32 hours. And so I did wonder, like, she's my 7th baby, you know, it was a little bit of position, but then maybe it was, you know, a tired uterus. So I did play with that a little bit. And then our 7th was the really quick hour, and then 20 minute one. And then he was right back at like the 7-8 hour mark. So I don't know. That hasn't been the case for me. And the only baby that I had bleeding problems where it was the third, which I know thirds can be wild cards too.
Yeah.
So there was a little bit of bleeding with Lincoln, but there was never to a point where I felt physically or kind of red flags for me.
Okay, great. And so that transitions then me into talking about depletion. Like, what mm-hmm. is going on? What do you eat? What are the things you're doing so you're not depleted? Because I know you breastfeed your babies too. So you've probably been basically pregnant or breastfeeding for almost like 30 years.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. Okay. So I was near a lifelong vegetarian and I felt great until I didn't. And it took me a little bit to recognize that it could be potentially depletion in diet. And so it was the pregnancy before Atreyu, I miscarried. And then had a month or so after that, I remember looking down at my legs and I just looked like a bruised banana, like significantly. I was just very, very bruised up, like big, long bruises. And so that was kind of my like, what's going on here? And so I started to add in a little bit more fish, and I definitely moved through like the dogmatic approach to diet and tried to press it up against my husband and all of that. But I had grown to enough to where if I wanted to explore, I was comfortable with eating intuitively, but I still wasn't at the point of meat. And so I did a lot of fish and supplements and herbal remedies prior to Atreyu's pregnancy. And then I got pregnant with him, and the craving for meat in pregnancy around 7 months was like otherworldly. Like, I would salivate thinking about it, and I text my husband like, we're going to go to Chipotle so I can get shredded beef. Do not tell anyone. It has to be a secret. And he loved it because he'd been waiting for this like for years.
Yeah. And so did it feel just so good going in your body, or did you wrestle with it?
And that's the thing. That's kind of where I'm at now, is that so much that we're seeing, because we're seeing this huge shift from vegetarians going back into like these carnivore diets and sharing stories of like how they just feel a million times better and like feel like a new woman. And that hasn't been my experience, but there's also just I feel strong that I need to continue with more animal-based products in my diet while I'm breastfeeding and having babies. But I don't feel like a huge difference, which I was hoping for it, but it hasn't been the case. Yeah. It started off very heady for me. I just think we're different. I mean, the constitutions and all of that. And so I just go with like kind of what I'm craving and how I'm feeling. But I do believe that right now it's something that I need to continue leaning into. I don't feel called to be vegetarian or even label it, but I plant-based diet right now while I'm breastfeeding and mothering young children.
No worries. Puppy bark.
And the potential of any more children, I'm going to continue just, allowing that.
Yeah, no, I get that. So do you feel pretty well nourished after each of your babies and during your breastfeeding, or do you reach points where you're sort of like, and I'm done with this, or how's it been
with breastfeeding?
Yeah. And just sort of feeling like postpartum replenishing of nutrients, like, you know, your gaps in between your ages of your kids. Well, you have nice gaps.
My cycle, I'm lucky in that sense. I mean, I guess it's how you look at it. But my cycle doesn't return until I'm like near the 2 year postpartum mark, or I'm nearing weaning completely. So it takes a while for my body to bounce back into that, which is great. But when we wanted to invite another baby in sooner, it can be tricky. And that's also something that I learned. Esme and Atreyu were the first babies that I tandem nursed with, and was also the earliest my cycle had came back, and I kind of encouraged it. And tandem nursing was not for me. It would tandem nursing would make my skin crawl. I just did not enjoy it. And thankfully, Esme was, she was 2.5-ish and was really sweet. And there was no issues with like taking turns versus them together. But
I have always
trust my body and my my internal intelligence.
Yeah, I've always looked at people who tandem nurse and just going like, I can't imagine anything harder than that. I just feel like it would be so, or twins too. Have you ever thought like, well, I don't know, do you get ultrasounds and things, or do you do like a full no ultrasound situation?
No, I'm not a full no. I kind of leave everything open. So I just, it's pregnancy to pregnancy, what I feel called to do. He's the most hands-off out of all of my pregnancies. But yeah, we did a quick peek just because we have some family history with some heart stuff. And so we did a quick peek with him. And so we knew
that. You knew he wasn't a twin.
It's so funny because twins came up so much that even Kaylee was like, I don't know. It's not unheard of, but.
Yeah, you hear those like surprise free birth twin stories. I feel like they're more common in the free birth world. I'm just like, yeah, like what? How? I don't know.
Did have ultrasounds. So
yeah, it does too. And it's like, how did you miss it?
Yeah, and one of them, it was, she's not a friend, but a mom. She had the ultrasound like at 38 or 39 weeks, and. And that was like her second ultrasound. They still missed the second baby.
That just really goes to show. Yeah, that just goes to show that there's mistakes that can be made in that kind of situation. Okay, I wanted to ask you about like bedrooms and cars and like just the logistics of having a large family.
Okay. So we have a Ford Transit that seats 15. Okay. So that's not an issue there. The room situation in this house, we moved here 3 years ago, and it's smaller than our previous house, but it's a four bedroom. It's three, and then we have a little bedroom above the garage that acts as an office right now, and we're actually outgrowing this faster than we thought because a lot of our kids slept in our room, so we thought we had the wiggle room for a little bit. But right now we have our 14 and 10-year-old sons in a room, and then our 12 and 6-year-old are set up in a room, and our 6-year-old still sleeps with us though as well, and then our 4 and then Lincoln sleeps with us. So it's 2-2, and then we actually converted the formal dining room into a room where my 16-year-old is. So we closed off the doors and that's her bedroom. And then when my 19-year-old was home, she had the room that was above the garage. And then she's moved out and doing her thing. So,
okay. Yeah. And then what about the idea of the differences or how to manage and juggle? What's it been like in your experience? You have every single age of child. You have an adult child. You have teenagers. You have like adolescent, preteen kind of puberty-esque type kids. You have just kids, you have toddlers, and you have a newborn. How?
Oh, man. That's such a hard question because I feel like I've been doing it for so long that you just jump in and you do it. There was a transition point that happened so quickly, and it was during our moving. And I don't know if that's what made it feel so big, but I haven't really heard other mothers of older children with little ones speak to this, but it happens all of a sudden where you're mothering a bunch of little ones and then boom, you've got more bigger ones than you have little ones. And so that happened in the last 3 years for me, and that it is a big transition and kind of finding my footing in that again, with the older ones being busy and doing a lot of running around and making sure they're getting to explore their interests and all of that fun stuff while still showing up and doing all the things that I enjoy doing and the little ones need from me. So there is like this teetering back and forth and finding a balance in that. But the how is just, I really wish I had solid, like, this is how it's done, because it's just day. And the needs, like, everybody's needs kind of change. And I think that's like so much of like, how do you make it fair? It's like, well, it's impossible for one with, I think, even like three kids or siblings in general, and you're kind of setting yourself up for failure if you're constantly trying to meet that fairness. But also it teaches them to, what's the word I'm looking for? It removes the unrealistic expectation of not having to make sacrifices later on in life or compromise. And so I really like to make sure that they're having like some one-on-one time with either parent. But it's not going to be look the same like every single week or every single day, or they might have to wait a little bit longer for this. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah,
kind of put into words like our day to day and how we kind of meet.
Yeah, you've been doing it for so long now, you just sort of flow. I wonder, like, do you get overstimulated?
Oh, of course. I got over. Yeah, I mean, of course. It's just, but that's like, that's where I think, but that's on me. That's where I have to take accountability and responsibility. It's not so much like my mothering that's overstimulating me, but it's where I've shown up in the lack of taking care of myself. And that's where I have to kind of own that and be, I didn't eat well, I didn't sleep well, or recognize like I am trying to do, like, it's not a homeschool day that I want it to look like. We're not going to do book work today. We're going to go outside and explore and play. And that removes a lot of the overwhelm. So it's just like stepping back. It's like the magical, like the magic, like, piece that we don't talk about enough in motherhood is like the pause button or the pivot button. Like, hit it as much as you need throughout.
Yeah, that has been something I've only learned in the last like year, I feel, is to just be like, okay, this isn't working. I think I held so strongly to my expectations of myself. And this is something that Leah and I talk about on this podcast a lot, is like, when you have been in control of your life for a period of time, which, like, you know, for a lot of women who don't start having kids until their 30s, that has been their experience of life, is like, mm-hmm. I'm just in control of me. And if I want something, I go work harder for it and I get it. But when you have children, you're in this dance with them. And I think it's been something I didn't like recognize that I was doing, where I was just trying to crush my ideals and goals and put it into a mold. And I still struggle with it. I'm way better now, but I still struggle with it, where I'm like, okay, but like, to what extent is them pushing back on boundaries, like, just developmental and normal? And then what is it where I need to actually make a change for them? Or, well, but no, this is the way that we believe that things are going, and like, this is how we should live our life, and so we're going to live it like this. And like, rah, 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 so, you know, infinite examples.
Yeah.
And it's hard sometimes. Like, it
really is.
Yeah. Like, even just recently, our 9-year-old has been pushing back about, he feels like we're too strict, which I feel like we are not strict, but he sees kids going to public school and eating more candy than he does and playing more video games than he does. And he wants that life. And I'm like, bro, I get it. I understand. And like, you do go to a school, it's a homeschool co-op. You do eat candy sometimes, and you do play video games usually about every day. It's just for a shorter period of time. Like, we're allowing these things within the realm that has worked for us. And but it's tricky when you have a strong personality. Like, he is a very strongly oriented to like what's cool and popular and trendy, and it's just socially, he's like very social, he's like Mr. Popular kind of guy, so he gears towards that. So then he has a big problem with this, whereas my two girls could care less. Like, their personalities are just not like that, right? As you know, they're also different. But then, so then with them, it's like one of them wants to maybe get into Girl Scouts, one of them maybe wants to take like a ballet class, and I'm like, okay, how can we soccer practice three times in a week? I can't even. How do you do that?
Crazy.
I mean, I guess your kids start driving. That's maybe different.
Yeah. So with the pushback or the if one of them is upset, we mean it in the same way that you're describing. We just, you know, validate what's coming up from them and like, yeah, I totally get it. That makes sense that you would feel that way. And also, these are the boundaries and what we're comfortable with as parents. And also, I feel like if we're constantly molding ourselves to make, well, again, you're going to set yourself up for failure because it's absolutely impossible when you have multiple children. But even if you were just to have one babe, if you're constantly remolding yourself to fit their comfortable or what they want, then when like the goal of parenting is to get to a point where they're able to flex their freedoms and go out into the world and, you know, live among society and stuff. And that takes, like I was saying, like the sacrificing and the, doing some things that don't feel great and compromising, learning how to compromise with ease is such a huge game changer as a young adult. And so we very much meet it in the same way, because that's come up for a couple of our babes too, whereas others are just like, not bothered by it at all.
go ahead.
So we have 5 in soccer this year. And it's going to be, last year we had 4, but this year it's 5. And it really, we have already talked to them. I mean, Atreyu's 4, so his is going to be like 2 practices in the evenings and no games or anything. But even with the 4 older ones that are playing, so it's my 16-year-old, my 14-year-old, 12, and 10-year-old that play. And 2 of them are on a rec team, and then 2 of them wanted to be and have played on in club for a couple years. And so they all know, and we're all in agreeing that there's going to be some times where we can't either make the game, like the parents, like they can get a ride, like my 16-year-old often catches a ride and then we'll meet up. But there's just going to be a lot of like juggling of it. And also the club will take priority over the rec.
Yeah.
That tends to be more competitive, and they have games that are, you know, a drive away. So if the 2 land, we have to go to the game that drives, and they're cool with that and comfortable with that. But still, they get to all play. It's just those weekends where it's wild. We have to choose. We have to pick and choose. And but yeah.
And there's so much learning there for them,
yeah,
about all of it. And back to the comment too that you receive about people assuming that, like, you know, your oldest child is like your live-in nanny or whatever. It's like, there, the benefit of being, well, I do think it's legit, because there are some parents, as you've probably encountered and seen, where they do really make their older children grunt work. Yeah. And that's sad, and that's hard, and that's the whole like, there's a name for it. It's like
parentification or something.
And just like oldest girl syndrome, specifically if your oldest is a girl, where it's like
older child or something.
Yeah, something. I'm not exactly sure, but it's, and that's legit, and we don't want to do that. But it's also like, okay, hang on. There is such a beautiful character building, values building experience for many years for these children to have these micro experiences of seeing that like the world is not revolve around them. How do we juggle lots of tasks at the same time? How do we have compassion for other people's needs? How do we just sort of show up, like notice and do what needs to be done around the house or whatever it is?
Yeah.
And I just think it's humans are meant to be living communally, and whether that's within your actual own family, because there's so many of them, or it's with neighbors and friends and different people. It's the benefit of it, I think, way outweighs any negative, you know?
Yeah. And having the older girls, I think I am starting to see a lot of that play out and how the benefit of that plays out, because of just how they're starting to show up in the world. And yeah, it's pretty cool. But yeah,
being sweet little nurturing mamas.
Yeah. Well, it's funny.
Sorry, go ahead.
My oldest is the sweet nurturing, and then my 19-year-old is like, I don't know if I want kids. Maybe one. It's like, yeah, I have one following like all the kids, and then the 19-year-old's like, yeah. I can see so much of myself in both of them, where one is like very nurturing and wants to be the mama, and the other was like, I need to just explore, and my tend to these itchy heels.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. But it's beautiful. It's like maybe she'll come back around and maybe she won't.
Oh, and yeah. And if she doesn't, that's okay.
You know. Okay, I wanted to ask you, I love your Instagram will link in the show notes because it's really educational, and especially when you show a lot about like your meal prep stuff and how you feed everybody, because it's just hard to do in general.
Yeah.
But also helpfully and also like within a budget. So I wanted to ask you if you have any systems in place around like chores or the affordability, the meal prep stuff, like the systems of your house. If I didn't like constantly clean it up, would just be an absolute mess all the time. And I know my kids are a little bit younger still, but you still have those ones. So how does it work in yours?
I'm still constantly cleaning up. I don't know if that ever goes away, but yeah, I'm constantly cleaning up, but the kids do help. We do have a dish rotation. So we rotate whose week it is to handle the dishes, which that in itself takes a huge amount off of my plate. And then my 16-year-old does her laundry. And then we had it before Lincoln arrived. We had it to where they each had a day that was their wash day. And then that kind of kept things going and kept things feeling not too crazy. And then obviously I was doing the younger ones, but even my 6-year-old, like, she'll help sort and she runs and puts her stuff away. So yeah, there's an expectation. I say that all hands on deck or the ship sinks.
Are you reminding them, you know, okay, hey, child number 3, it's your wash day today, like go do it? Or do they kind of know?
They know it's their week. There's still some gentle nudging, like, hey, it's time. And it depends on which kiddo, too.
So, yeah, right. They're with their personalities.
Yeah, those Leo kids, I'm telling you what, it's like dishes and it's like dramatic meltdown. So,
yeah. So then, okay, how do you manage that? Okay. All right, Leah, let's talk about a few parenting things. So how do you manage the melting down of the, you know, pushing up against boundaries? And then what about sibling rivalries and sibling dynamics? Okay,
so the sibling rivalry. The biggest thing, I think my biggest tip when it comes to having the bickering or even tattling, like even if it's not something as big as like rivalry, is recognizing that oftentimes it's more of connection than it is competition in those situations. And then also doing our very, very best to avoid meeting those situations with the idea that we have to show up as the judge, the investigator, or take sides. Those are like, if you can like set them completely aside, which can be difficult when one babe is coming to you and they're really upset and they're sharing, you know, a very valid reason to be upset, and you immediately turn to the other and like, why'd you do that? And even like this, even if it doesn't, you don't recognize it as taking sides, it might feel that way, but we can still validate one as well as remind them that that you weren't there. And so there's absolutely zero way that we're ever going to know exactly what happened. And then you can show up and you can offer more like guidance and language on how to do the like repair and that. And then reminding too, like the boundary of like, there's like, I'm sorry that happened and that you're hurting, but there's absolutely no hitting allowed, or there's absolutely no excuse for breaking toys or whatever it may be. If you can avoid like showing up as the referee, because especially even like definitely if you weren't there to see like the whole thing, because then it really sets you up for that to like continue, like the bickering and the tattling, it will just kind of roll over.
Okay. Okay. So you said don't show up as the judge, the investigator, or the
take sides.
And then don't take sides. Okay. So let's just give me, I'm going to give an example. So, okay, take sides. I'm writing this down literally for myself here. So like a couple days ago, my mother-in-law took my 3 older kids to Dairy Queen. They got cones. When they came back to the house, my 6-year-old still had a little bit of her cone left. They were jumping on the trampoline and some of the ice cream from the cone got onto the trampoline, and my 9-year-old ripped it out of her hand and threw it over the net of the trampoline and was like, you're done. And it was just the littlest like last bit, but she was like savoring it, you know, nibbling on it like a mouse. So then she starts bawling. She like runs into the house. She's scream crying. And I'm trying to figure out what happened and stuff. And she, and then my immediate reaction was like, I knew if somebody had done that to him, taken his little last bit that he was savoring, he would be absolutely furious. And his attitude about it was triggering to me because he was like, well, what? How big of a deal? It was only like, you know, it was a quarter of an inch long, like da da da. And I'm just like, yeah, but blah, blah, blah. So what, how would you handle that in that sort of situation?
At my most regulated self.
Yes. Yes.
I would allow the kiddo to speak and again, validate that, or actually if the, with the attitude, I'd probably ask, or not so even much like directly ask, but maybe allow or create the space for more to come up in that. And so you're like, I know I would feel kind of bummed if my sister came home with ice cream and I didn't have it. Like, I'd be kind of irritated and or annoyed or whatever word you want to slide in there. But like, she's hurting and that wasn't cool. That was rude. And then allow them to then be like, yeah, like, that was crappy that I would have liked an ice cream cone, or I would just, you didn't want to sit here and watch her eat it when I didn't have one, or whatever he comes back and starts to share with you. So then you can then like hold the feelings for that and then circle back around to like, how, you know, we could have the trampoline and like waited for her to finish the ice cream and came back, or you could just talk to me, or maybe there's a treat inside the house. Again, it's not trying to make it fair. But if one of them's coming to me and calmly being like, you know, Esme got an ice cream cone, can I have one of those chocolate chip cookies that we had? If they're coming to me like, yeah, cool.
Yeah, sure. You know? Yeah.
So just in reminding them of that too, like, hey, next time just come talk to me. Or if, you know, if that bothers you. And I know that's, again, we're talking like the most regulated state even for them too. But I think.
Yeah, no, I love that. It's helpful to hear because that – sometimes, yeah, it depends. Sometimes I'm like, that was so mean and uncalled for. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and sometimes but, that's necessary too. Like,
yeah, especially I think. Yes, and when the attitude comes in, it's extra hard because you're kind of like, if they were sorry right away, and this is something we're constantly trying to teach our kids is like, listen, sometimes you're not going to mean to hurt somebody. You know, you were spinning around, holding something in your hand, and then you knock somebody in the head. Yeah, you didn't mean to hit them, but the truth is that you did, and you hurt them, and so. When we can lead with taking accountability, then it sort of diffuses everything because like, even if you didn't mean to, but if you can just be like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I did not mean to hit you. That person is usually not even going to be mad anymore. Mm-hmm. But if we come at it as in denial or like, oh, it's not that big of a deal or dismissive, it puts up the defense. And so I've been trying to kind of like teach them all to see that. And it's like, if you can just come to the situation and be like, hey, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that. Like I shouldn't have done that. Then I don't know. At least for me, it diffuses so much of the tensions around it. Mm-hmm. And that like, I'm trying to teach him specifically, everything is worse when we deny and we want to take accountability. And it doesn't feel good when somebody else is doing that to you. So then I'll try to like point that out in those different situations. Cause yeah, it is, I'm really glad that you keep reiterating that things cannot always be fair.
Right.
And I think as parents, when you have a couple of them, you're like, well, I have to keep it fair. And I think it is easier when you only have a couple, but it isn't necessarily realistic for life. And when there is more, it becomes impossible. And there has to be some lessons in that about, you know, you'll get your moment and, or your date with mom and dad, you know, however, or your special time or your thing and da, da, da. It's, man, it's so tricky. It is so tricky.
It is. It's a, yeah, it's definitely a slippery slope too. With the whole fairness thing. And another thing I think of too, if we're constantly trying to like simmer and stop big feelings that come up for them, then are we passing the message on that like those big feelings shouldn't exist or be present versus just like being the safe space for them to express and, you know, in the, there's again, like safely and not hurting others, but allowing them to feel the big things that come up with them rather than constantly trying, okay, I'll get you the cookie, or okay, let's go for ice cream, or like trying to like immediately jump in with fairness, because that's again setting them up for just hard time as young adults, teenagers even.
Absolutely. I love that. And then it kind of also relates into this. I keep seeing this quote about that's, I want to create a culture in my house where my kids can think when something bad happens, like instead of thinking, oh shit, mom can't find out. I want them to think like, oh shit, I have to go tell mom.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that we're like on their team with problem solving. And I'm sure that you, with having your teenagers and stuff, that's so much more of a thing because they're out in the world and they're at parties and they're driving and they're doing all sorts of stuff. I don't know how you do it. It'd be so tricky, but okay. Ariana, thank you so much for coming on and, you know, just sharing your life with us and continuing to share your life too on Instagram. Your account will be linked so people can follow you, because it's rare, I think, to find people who are living life in the way that you do. And it's important for all of us to find our motherhood mentors. You're definitely one for me. Oh, so thank you for being that. Yeah, like people that you can look up to and are continuing, who are in stages ahead of you to continue to learn from, and like, you know, that have things figured out that you don't have figured out yet. And it's just, we all have to have our mentors in whatever it is that we're doing. Motherhood is my entire personality right now. Yeah. And I love it. And I will keep it that way. So for me, that's everything revolves around that. But, you know, whether it's a certain sport that people are playing, or they're in a hobby, or their work life, they're entrepreneurs, whatever it is, we all have to have our mentors. And I think finding those people and really being able to just have good conversations like this, or watch and learn. It's like, you know, modeling behavior. It's we're not modeled behavior only in our childhood. We are modeled behavior for our entire lives.
Yeah.
And it's important, especially if we have a very strong goal of parenting a specific way that also may be different from the way that we were parented, or that we saw other stuff, or that it's a new concept you hadn't heard of, or something like that. And you're trying to embody it and make a change. It makes it a hell of a lot easier when there's other people around you doing that, and that you can ask them questions, or you can just even literally watch and learn passively from like reels or stories or something. So I just really appreciate all that you do in that space, you know, for me and for everyone else. And thank you for coming on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Are you pregnant or trying to conceive and looking for reliable, engaging education around how to have a healthy pregnancy and prepare for the future aspects of motherhood to come, like birth, breastfeeding, and postpartum? Well, then look, I've got you. This is exactly the education that you'll receive with my 6-week pregnancy call. You get access to my most comprehensive resource of everything I wish women knew before heading into motherhood. It's simultaneously a pregnancy health course, birth prep series, breastfeeding 101 course, and postpartum planning class all in one. And now it's available not only during our live rounds, where you get tons of one-on-one support from me and a small group of like-minded women, but also in a lessons-only format. The lessons-only version of this course is just that. It's all of the content, but it's without the Q&A calls and without the group chat. This version is available on my website at all times too. So log on to www.milkmedicine.com/lessons-only to check it out, or you can go to the show notes for the link. I hope that you'll enjoy it. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.